Good afternoon, panel. I personally feel CMS has failed a lot of kids in educating them from the standpoint of you basing everything on a test score. And as being a vocational trainer and a former teacher, I've never heard an employer ask me, what did he make on a test score? I never heard a college admission person ask, what did they make on a test score? So you're basing it all off the wrong thing. But what I want you to do is define what is poverty and give me some stats on how you used a, say, poor black kid moved into an affluent kid, affluent school, and how it lifted them out of poverty.
I've been asking that since June. There's no data that shows anything like that.
No, are we just asking in general? There's plenty of data that actually talks about that. We actually have folks such as David Howard that would be able to talk to you about his own progression through. If you want to learn about how that's, it's not about just sending kids to affluence. Excuse me, what data? So again, I said we can go all the way through, whether you're looking at going back to the Coleman report, whether you want to, if you want to go on the OneMec website, again, there's plenty of opportunities. You want to talk about Colin Berg, you can talk about plenty of folks who talk about the value of socioeconomic diversity.
But are we? Yeah. There are a lot of, and this is what I mentioned in the first segment, there are a lot of studies out there that do show improvements for whether you say a low-income student moving to a mixed income school. But for example, it's really tough with CMS because, you know, when you have, most of these studies are mostly middle class students that they're moving to. And with the demographics of CMS, I mean, we're mostly a district that is free and reduced lunch kids.
I've actually not seen the actual study that shows child A moves from high poverty school to low poverty school and his test scores changed. Just from the morphation, or did osmosis happen in that little move? I have seen that students in high concentrations of poverty have a lower rate of academic success versus their peers, but I've not actually seen the data where one student's test scores were compared just with the only change in the data being the location of the school. The other item, Mike, that we've never discussed tonight is that back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, up to 2000, we really didn't have parents, we had choice. The choices in Mecklenburg County at that point were you homeschooled your kid if you didn't want to go to CMS, or you paid $16,000 a year to go to private school. The difference we have today are we have a plethora of choices for parents outside of CMS. We don't have a captive audience. If we tell you we're going to take away your choice, guess what? The DPI already says they've got a choice. They can choose to go to a charter school free of charge, and they can move their money to that charter school. And that is exactly what we're seeing happening right now in this county as we discuss this and we discuss taking choice away from parents. They're telling us, you can't take it away. I'm choosing to leave you and go to a publicly funded charter school.
Let's go over here.
Yes, good evening. I hear a lot of talk about choice, and I was wondering if you would just take the magnet program as a microcosm. I have a child in the Montessori program, and I love it. And the magnet schools are, I think, an example of what CMS can do really well. My question is, why aren't the magnet schools subject to a true lottery preference rather than what to me seems like a stacked preference that favors, in order, students within walking distance and then takes into consideration the busing zone with its drawn boundaries, however they're drawn, and finally goes to CMS-wide?
I'm not sure I get the question.
She's just, you know, there's actually priorities for some of the magnet lottery. Students within walk zones tend to have a higher priority getting in. I think that we need to make magnet schools open choice, but I also want us to consider if a student is assigned to a school that is an A school, then perhaps their options are less, are more limited than a student that's assigned to an F school. So I think a student that's assigned to a failing school, in my opinion, and I haven't vetted this with my board members, they're probably wishing I'd be quiet, but in my opinion, students that are assigned to schools that are not successful should have a higher ranking when they're going in the lotteries to choose.
I was going to definitely say that. I think that's, you asked in the beginning how we achieve some of these goals that we sent to the board. I think that's one of the biggest things is that if you're in a school system that's in your neighborhood school and the school's doing well and it's providing what you need for your child, then you're last on the list for the magnet. I think if you're in a school system to where the school is not performing and is not giving you what you need, then I think at that point you should have first choice, 100%, because, hey, my school's okay. Mm-hmm. The magnet school should be first and foremost to the people who are feeling that their schools that are in the neighborhood are not up to speed and up to par, then move it out and open it up to the rest of the Mecklenburg school system.
Well, part of the good part about doing the student assignment review is that we will have to rewrite our policy for student assignment, which will include magnets and lotteries and the whole thing, so that in the process we can look at it all. To your point, we can see exactly what we want to change in this without having to do it in a piecemeal way, just whatever we think of doing. When we're looking at the whole thing, when we've got goals, we're working on guiding principles. When we get those done, we'll have our consultant helping us see what may be possible. We'll rewrite our policy so that we'll be able to look at every part of it, not just boundaries, not just where we draw lines, but how kids get to what schools they want to go to.
And I think that's key. I mean, and I think part of why we've stepped back and said we're not saying do this specifically, and when we talked about a consultant, is saying let's look at all different ways it can be done, because in some places it may be achieved through a partial magnet or a full magnet. In some places it may be based on boundaries. Sometimes it may be based on school pairings. It could be based on different things. And I think there's a key point that was mentioned indirectly here, because we kind of mentioned choice. So one of the things is everybody's assigned to school. And so I think saying that I don't like the school I'm assigned to and saying that that's taking away my choice, in a way it's almost hypocritical in a way, just because there's plenty of folks who are assigned to school. So student assignment, we're going to be assigned to a school. All right. So, but the difference is, am I making a choice to run from something, or am I making a choice to run to something? And so part of the value of having more balance in schools is people take an investment in it. So it's like I'm invested because my kids may be here as well, whereas if it's not, I'm kind of locked. Often, folks, it's easier to just kind of say I don't have to concern myself with that.
Over here.
Yeah. Okay. well, I read a lot about how the high poverty schools have a lot of discipline issues. And today we heard that in low poverty schools we have drug issues. We heard a lot about diversity benefit everybody, but are we thinking about, you know, diversity can spread those problems?
What's the last? We couldn't catch the last part of your comment.
Could diversity spread those problems? Is what he asked.
Okay,
gotcha. Great question. That's a great question. So, you know, going to, you know, when we talk about, you know, often people talk about discipline. You know, when they talk about concentrated poverty and they talk about behavior, those are rules, words that we use. And I'll say I come from a clinical standpoint, and often sometimes we're also dealing with trauma and PTSD that we call conduct disorder when it's certain kids, whereas with other kids we would call it PTSD. And so when we're talking about folks that are having to worry, sometimes it's not just always about the eating part. Sometimes it's about a constant eviction threats and those kinds of things, and we're all concentrated in one classroom together. And there's one teacher designed to be my social worker, to be my counselor, to be my teacher for a test. It's setting everybody up for challenges. And so one of the things that I was mentioning to your point was I think greater perspective helps all of us. So again, if I'm concentrated in affluence, I know this world, and sometimes that in itself creates a rat race, whereas I'm concentrated in poverty, it creates a different rat race, whereas when there's more balance, it's not just about spreading kids out. It's saying when there's more balance and perspective, I can see a world outside of my own that may shift me from having as much of a social emotional deficit as I'm experiencing.
Can I say one thing to that?
I'd like to speak to that too.
I think you have a great point on that. But I think you also, when you speak to that of, you know, higher affluence is going to have its certain issues, and poverty, to the gentleman's perspective, is going to have other things, you know, I guess, that they have to take into consideration. I think that you look at that, though, that you're almost kind of speaking to the middle of trying to figure out that you're going to blend those two and expect both of them to figure out, oh, well, they're going to come together and have similar problems across the board. I don't think that's the case. I think what you have to do is speak to the fact of the person who is poverty or in a poverty area, they're going to have completely different things that they have to look at and that's in their community that they have to speak to before they can even get their education started in the day, whereas affluence is going to have its own issues of, you know, higher performing, more competition, whatever the case. I think you need to get back away from all that and get back to the fact of, hey, this is poverty, this isn't, but we need to figure out how to make that school speak to those children for their needs to make them better so that they can be career ready and be tested and be able to go forth in the rest of the world and be able to be a positive learner, a positive student.
And that's saying, you know, we're almost talking about students living in isolation. I live in a more affluent area. I'm a single working mom. I filed bankruptcy 4 years ago. I have been at the bottom of the heap and I've worked my way back up. My son is not a child of affluence because we filed bankruptcy and we lost our home. I learned how to deal with it. But my son goes to a school with a lot of kids that have a lot of money. He also goes to a school with a lot of kids that don't have a lot of money. He doesn't feel any pressure because of that or lack of pressure. For his birthday, he went down. Actually, we prepared lunches and we went downtown because his choice for his birthday was to make sandwiches and feed the homeless. So we act like children of affluence are never going to see beyond their bubble or children of poverty are never going to see beyond their bubble. We as parents need to own our own role in this. It's my job to make sure my son has a global perspective. It's teachers right now. We are expecting our teachers, and this is the hardest thing for me. My daughter's going into education. We are expecting our teachers to be armed as a social worker, a drug counselor, a nutrition advisor, a nurse to make sure that they're not having medical issues related to their all their issues. And we're expecting them to do a ridiculous amount of testing that's required by the state and federal government. And we're expecting them to be a social engineer at the same time. So we need to take a little bit of the heat off of our teachers, and we need to find programs to work as a community to alleviate some of those roles that teachers are now having to play in the classroom.
So, and actually, kind of what you just said, so one of the things about concentrations of poverty, you actually just kind of hit on indirectly in terms of what we're putting on our teachers, because the greatest rates of turnover and everything else on a regular basis are in our schools that are concentrated in poverty. And one of the things that I've heard from teachers on a regular basis is that it is overwhelming, all of the challenges come in. I love these kids. I want to do all I can for these kids. But God, it feels like it's just too much for me to handle. And so I think it's important for us to acknowledge those uncomfortable realities. It's not a reality I like. It's not a reality you like. But it is a reality. It's a reality that shows up in research. It's a reality that shows up when we talk to our teachers. And so I think we have to acknowledge that, yes, concentrating poverty is detrimental. And again, it's not that a poor kid can't be successful, and it's not that an affluent kid can't be global. It's saying that by having more balance, and that's, I'm talking about people coming to the middle together. It's not, let's put the poorest together and the richest together and let's see what happens. It's saying, why don't we have more balance throughout our system where it's feasible and makes the most sense?
And
all right. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My name is Thomas Hu. I am a WFAE sustainer and also and I'm also a parent of two CMS Asian minority students. I don't want this conversation goes like we don't exist. I'm here today to speak for neighborhood schools because I believe neighborhood schools are not just for my kids, they're good for all kids. Now, my question for the panelists is, how do you deal with the reducing diversity of the district-wide by when you artificially creating diversity in schools? What I'm talking about is, you know, if you artificially mix students, the mid-income families are going to leave, right? So you leave your the school still with very high concentration of poverty, but district-wide, you're going to see higher and higher concentration of poverty. So how do you deal with that? And today, we stand at 60% of ED students district-wide. Maybe 5 years later, by, you know, implementing what you envision, we will have 80% of ED students. How do you deal with that? My second question is, I have long question. Well, Mr. Perry showed a mobility study. I have studies showing actually CMS poor students are actually doing pretty well, better than their peers. For example, compared to Raleigh, we're doing better. There is also a national study called, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name, but CMS kids are doing better than 20 other urban school districts. How do you respond to that? Thank you.
Sure. So let's start with the interesting question. The really interesting question is if in the process of trying to create diverse schools and break up pockets of poverty, you drive more people out, creating larger pockets of poverty overall, what have you achieved?
Didn't I mention charter schools? It's there. It's already happening. We already, Mecklenburg County in as a whole is not 60% poverty, but our school district is. We already are not reflective of the county because people are already choosing to leave.
And the elephant in the room needs to be asked about, too. How much of this concern over diversity and parents' fear of diversity, and parents say they're afraid of busing, they're afraid of what might happen, how much of it is racial and not socioeconomic?
I mean, I'm happy to answer that.
I beg your pardon?
I'd be happy to talk to that. I think that's very important, and it's always going to be in the room. It's part of our culture. What people fail to ever want to talk about is they always want to make it about race. We saw in the survey that We saw in the survey that it did not matter what group you were in, how you identified yourself, or what part of the county you were in. You wanted your kids to go to school in a school close to home so that you could be involved and engaged in their school. It wasn't about race. It wasn't about location. So I think that we as parents, our primary goal and the primary goal of parents that I talk to is they want what is best for their student. They want what is best for their child. They want their school that may be not performing at the same level as school B, and school A is not performing at that level. They want us to put the right teachers in there. They want us to put the right programs, the right support staff. Justin is absolutely correct. Our teachers are asked to do an astronomical load right now, and we need that village of other people intervening in those students' lives so the teachers can focus on learning and academics, and other people can address all the socioeconomic concerns that the children bring to the schoolhouse with them. We are not going to ever achieve that if we're just not honest about it and say that parents, it doesn't matter, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, whatever, that survey showed, and parents that I speak to, it doesn't matter where they come from. They want their student in a school that is great, and they want it to be close enough that they can be engaged and involved in the school.
Sean and I both were talking about the value of listening, and so I made a point to go to different forums, and I went to the forum at District 6, and I went to the forum that Thelma Byers Bailey had the other, who was Charlotte, and I think one of the things is, so what I heard folks say was that, yes, if great opportunity is there at my school and nearby, I'd love it, but I'm also willing to have my kids go further if that's what I need to do. And when we listened to a lot of the parents there, a lot of them said they weren't even aware of a lot of the differences in terms of course offerings, in terms of extracurricular activities. There's so many things. This is so much more nuanced than this is not an us versus them situation. I know, and it's a sexy way to cover it, but it's not. But yes, there's racial elements too and cultural. Even if you talk about concentrated our Latino population, there's linguistic isolation that occurs. So this thing is very nuanced in a way that we're not acknowledging. But yes, often when you look from a socioeconomic standpoint, it does matter. And I think speaking to your point about being concerned about driving folks away, I think that's why, again, you have to look at all of how you go about achieving it. So again, if they've done this survey, which again, I've mentioned in terms of the way diversity was handled in there, didn't necessarily agree with that. However, in terms of looking at the different options of magnets and those kinds of things, I agree with, because they're looking at, hey, what do folks want? So maybe we can figure out how to give folks what they want in a way that does produce more natural integration. And I experienced that when I went to Irwin Piedmont in West Charlotte. there was partial magnet and significant neighborhood school. And so it was a combination of both. And so it's saying, what do we have to not turn away and say diversity doesn't matter when there's a plethora of data that says it. It's saying, how do we effectively address things that we're uncomfortable with in a way that achieves what we're looking to do and doesn't drive folks away as much as possible?
So you're saying choice. I'm hearing the nuanced notion that choice is really what's going to make people want to stay.
What I'm saying is choice can be an element of it. What I'm saying, you know, Ms. Lennon, is looking at all elements of it. And that's why I mentioned before with our boundaries. That's why I said it's not just about circles on a map, but it's also acknowledging that we do have pieces on the map that don't make sense. And that when I went to that forum at West Charlotte, one of the things I heard one of the parents say there was, I don't like the way our district is drawn so that we only have renters in our school, but all the homeowners are sent off to other places. And so what I'm saying is, this is a combination between our real estate community, city council, as well as our school board. Again, we all have a role in this, and we have to not play parts that kind of lead us to gerrymander things, and school has a role in it.
And, as far as choice, I mean, right, that's something that I've heard on all sides, that choice needs to be a factor, and the board has said that repeatedly. And, you know, when you look at magnets now, I mean, the idea of magnets were that they would increase diversity at those schools. And they are more diverse than many other schools in the district. But if you do have, and I'm thinking, you know, socioeconomic diversity, if you make that a big part of your plan, how do you work that around to make these schools what you envision? So that people choose schools that are mixed.
Sean.
I kind of speak, and I know you probably weren't asking that to me, but I want to kind of tie it all together. You know, I hear the choice, I hear the magnet schools. I was actually I went to a high school that was a magnet school, and I've been to the D3, and honestly, if probably going to take everybody off by this, I'd love to take diversity off the table. I'd love to take the whole socioeconomic poverty, all of that. I'd like to go back to what I'm hearing people consistently say, that they want the choice. I heard a teacher at a Freedom School sitting there telling me that she was tired of having magnet schools that were diluted to call a magnet school. That was literally her quote. She wanted a magnet opportunity or a choice that would actually speak specifically to her needs for that specific community. And I think that she wanted that as a choice. She wanted, you know, to Justin's point, to know, and wanted her fellow individuals that lived in that community to be able to say, hey, yeah, there's my option. If I don't like what's in my backyard for my school, that will speak to my children, my community, and their prosperity through life.
Let's go over here somewhere.
Hello?
He's been waiting.
I have a question.
Find the microphone.
So I'm a proud product of CMS, and I've had the privilege of serving as a substitute teacher. And at what point do we discuss curriculum diversity? It wasn't until graduate school and undergrad that I found out the contributions of women, Native Americans, members of the LGBTQIA community, along with the Black community, of just the contributions to educate, or just this country. So at what point do we start talking about curriculum diversity?
The question is, well, you know, academically we do follow the state requirements for Common Core. We call it this North Carolina standards. What's it called?
Standards. Yeah, course of study.
Course of study.
Thank you,
Mary. So we do have to follow that. We have to do that, and we have to teach that in every place, so make sure that the kids get that education. I agree with you that there's an awful lot that we need to make sure that folks learn about the way our country actually got going, and who did what in our country and in the world, and make sure that it's as broad as possible. But so we do that. We can do that through electives, and we can do that as creatively as we can in the basic core courses.
Oh, hello. My name's Joel Odom. I go to Northwest School of the Arts, and I'm trying to figure out one major thing right now for me, is trying to figure out. Y'all are talking about, especially you two, y'all are more for student assignment, am I correct?
As far as?
Or for more than student choice, because y'all are making references saying, well, parents won't a choice, but you're sitting here talking about student assignment. And I'm still trying to figure out from the kids at Bruns Elementary School, right, am I correct, which is suffering with high poverty right now, I'm trying to figure out what will be the change right now, because in the state of Charlotte, North Carolina, or in the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, we are ranked 50th out of 50 throughout the whole country to actually have economic growth. So right now, if you're in poverty, it's a 3% chance, if you're a minority, African-American, Asian, or Latino, to actually grow. And so what I'm seeing and hearing is limiting us from actually growing more than actually prospering us. Because right now, what I'm hearing is just saying student placement. I live all the way near South Park, and I drive to Northwest every day. I don't complain with it. That's a choice of mine. But when you take someone's voice away to just to justify certain individuals, which I do say certain individuals, because if you actually look at high schoolers, middle schooler viewpoints, they're not agreeing with what you're talking about, because half of the time it's not making sense.
It's Joel, correct?
Yes.
Joel, I think that's a great point. And I think that, you know, I was speaking to Justin about this, that I went to a Smith Family Forum and I listened to an individual high schooler at Independence, and she talked about something very similar, and it opened my eyes to it. And I even brought it back to the CMS Families group of, her whole point was, she said, I don't want to go to a different school. I chose to go to this school. I don't want to go to a different school because I have a rivalry with that school, and don't send me to another school, even if it's a choice of my parents. It was becoming a choice of her own at that point in high school, which it was really a different perspective to hear. And yes, I agree with you on the assignment perspective. I think no one wants to hear assignment. I think that's probably one of the biggest misused words as a whole. I think you're right that, you know, you are making a choice, and it does matter at the end of the day, your choice for your happiness and what's going to keep you to where you feel that it's going to better you as career ready, college ready, or future ready. So I'm kind of a little questionable about you saying that the assignment is a big goal of ours. It's a choice. I want every child, every family, every person to have the choice that you can speak to what you think is best for you as far as how you learn, and you speak with your parents about that and hopefully have a great conversation around it. I think it needs to start even earlier than that from an elementary perspective and build through the rest of your college or your high school, middle school, college education, so that you have those choices and that you feel you have a voice in that entire path for the rest of your life.
Justin.
And I'm greedy. I actually want to go to pre-K, but I'm with you, though. It's definitely got to start early. And I think going to your point, I do agree, and I'm glad you brought up the point again about the study. I mean, that's the thing we keep ignoring. Again, it's basically saying that we're borderline caste system. If you're born poor, chances are you're going to die poor in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that's just not acceptable, you know? And so again, what education has often been lauded for centuries as the great equalizer. And unfortunately, the study came out and said that in Charlotte, North Carolina, education is also one of our great stratifiers. So the point is, we got to figure out, how do we do this thing with more balance? Again, it's not saying, let's just turn everything up to down. I want to go back to your point. You mentioned Raleigh. Raleigh, for the long time, was doing better than we are. Raleigh's also taking steps backwards in turn. Right there. What? Let me finish responding to you. Right. So, and one of the things about Raleigh going down is actually Raleigh has actually started having greater concentrations of poverty in their schools. So they're trying to reverse course now. Again, these are two cities. That's the crazy thing about this. Charlotte and Raleigh are these two cities that were ridiculously growing really fast with economic development, that both had commitments to education and integration. And the challenge is, obviously, when we do have a lot of folks that come who didn't understand it, a lot of us that are here from Charlotte, we don't do a great job of communicating the value of it. It wasn't just a cool social idea. This actually was something that stimulated a lot of the economic growth that we had. Again, I tell people all the time that folks like Hugh McCall and Ed Crutchfield and the business community was united around the values of high quality education across the community that helped the city grow, that brought a lot of folks that are in this room here. And yet, if we start taking the path of Detroit and other folks who stopped valuing the balance of these things, we can go in the direction they're going as well. Right?
Can I speak to one point you made on that?
Thing that confuses me when, and I appreciate what you say because it absolutely, my family moved here in the 70s because Charlotte was booming at that point. We're growing. Our academic scores grow every year. They're not growing at the speed we want to. The trajectory between the lower achievers and the higher achievers is not going at the path that we want it to be. But every year our numbers are going up. It's so apples to oranges to talk about Wake County and Charlotte because they are 20 to 25% less poverty than we have. They are much better funded than we are. They had an $800 million bond. We had a $200 million bond the last time. So you can't even compare them. But we do outpace them, even though we have 20 to 25% higher rate of poverty than they do. So we do look at them and kind of benchmark, because we don't have anybody else to benchmark against in North Carolina.
Sure.
We have to at least benchmark against somebody. But you're right. And what you said is so absolutely true. I toured the health sciences school at Hawthorne, and I talked to a young lady there and asked her why she was going to that program. And she should have been zoned for West Charlotte. And she said because she found out about it and she wanted something different. So when she finishes high school, she'll be a CNA, certified nursing assistant, and she'll be partway going to nursing school. And I'm super excited about that since I'm a nurse. What we don't have an opportunity to do right now because our budget has been so cut over the last few years is we don't market our opportunities to students. We have all these middle college programs. We have the early college program at UNCC. We have health sciences. We have all these different programs, capstone, STEM, the academies at all of our different schools. We have the Cambridge program. We have IB. We don't market it because that's not our job. Our job is teaching kids. We don't want to spend our money outside of the classroom. But we have kids that get into high school and don't realize, oh my gosh, I really would have liked to have gone to that particular school. So we need to do a better job as a school district marketing ourselves. How many of you in this room knew that we had an Academy of Health Sciences, that you can go and you can get a nursing and education? Very few people in the community know about it. So I think we need to do a better job of making sure students know all the opportunities so they can have the choice. I'm working on that with my eighth grader right now, what choices we're going to make for high school.
We have time, I think, because we have to leave the room because they have to get it ready for Elevation Church, I think. It starts on Sunday again. So we have time for, I think, for one more question or maybe possibly two, depending on how long your answers are.
First of all, thank you all very much. We appreciate everything you do for our community sincerely. And my name is Bo Clark. I'm the president of a group of concerned parents called All CMS Kids on Facebook. And I think the first thing I want to say was this is a very emotion-inducing subject. And I think it's really important, especially for our leadership and the leadership of groups, to tone down the rhetoric by using facts very carefully. And I want to address a couple of points that have been highly misquoted here this evening. I'm hoping it's not intentionally misquoting these facts, because that would really cause me great concern. But for example, the first thing I want to talk about is the Harvard study that looked at economic mobility in Charlotte. That study looked at the bottom 20% of incomes and looked at the ability to move to the top 20% of incomes within a single generation. So it compared people in different cities in Charlotte and their ability. So we're hearing that the middle class is the absolute nirvana of what needs to be shared and spread all across Charlotte in order for kids to succeed academically, and yet you're totally discounting any movement from the bottom 20% into the 40, 60, 80% of economic mobility. So I would really appreciate it if we use data correctly. And don't say you're trapped, because I've moved from that bottom 20% with a single parent mother into maybe the 75th or 80th percentile, whatever. And, you know, it takes, so please, let's use that data correctly. The other thing is, that is not a proxy for academic performance. Economic mobility is not a proxy for academic performance. And the Thomas Hughes spoke to the data from the Department of Education about economic, about academic performance in Charlotte. And if you look at African-American, Hispanic, and white students versus their peers in all of the top 20 cities in the United States at the fourth and eighth grade levels for math and English, if you listen to what you heard here this evening, I'm here to tell you the sky is not falling in Charlotte, North Carolina, academically. If you listen to what you heard this evening, you'd think the sky was falling. Guess which groups ranked number one in the United States versus their peers?
Charlotte-Mecklenburg School.
Charlotte, North Carolina, for African-American students, number one, tied with Miami for the Hispanic community for number one. And the Caucasian or white students, and Thomas said, please don't make us not a minority. The Chinese community, they're all wrapped into the white numbers. Indian communities, all wrapped in the white number. Very large, diverse groups are all wrapped in the white number. They rank number five versus their peers. So I think we need to use good data, and I think we need to drill down programmatically. The problems that are going to be solved here, everybody wants the same things in this group. We all want to help all our kids improve their academic performance. All of our kids, our group is all CMS kids. We want to help everybody's kids do better, but that's solved by programs. And yes, schools have to be located in areas where, you know, we can have organic, more organic diversity than I think some of the things we have right now. But let's please try and ratchet down the rhetoric and use data accurately.
Thank you.
And that is all we have time
and
for.
And we did win the Broad Prize for urban education a few years ago, too. Just incidentally, we won the Broad Prize for urban education.